Hey folks, welcome to episode 3 of the Unkempt Podcast with Ashton York. Today's guest was Danny Corbo, one of my great friends. I've known him since we met in LA a couple years ago, pre-pandemic. Insane songwriter, musician, thinker, just a really intelligent and beautiful, humble, gentle person. Can't say enough about this guy. His music is fantastic. He's working on a really impressive EP right now, and I don't think he knows when it's going to come out, but hopefully someday soon. One of my favorite songs of his is called Let Down. It's absolutely stunning and extremely relatable. Yeah, this guy is just a great friend, and I thought he was an awesome conversationalist. I hope you enjoy hearing from him today. It is a sunny Monday here in San Francisco. We got some much-needed good weather, and I just got home from lunch with a good friend of mine, and she said, you know, it's funny how you talk about yourself like you don't do anything. And she was like, when I talk to you, I feel like you're always doing something. Like, you're starting a podcast? Like, didn't you just get home from Colorado where you're making music with a friend? And didn't you just finish an album? And, you know, she was just kind of buttering my bread a little bit. But also, I think she was genuinely saying, like, you should give yourself more credit. Like, you do things. So that was nice to hear. I'm just trying to soak that in a little bit, because, you know, I do try to be active, and I am pretty hard on myself, and we've got some cool things in the works. So I said this in the previous two intros, but I've got a show at the Hotel Utah on February 22nd. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to play. It's always great to get out there. And I think that's it for the intro. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Danny Corbo is just the sweetest guy, and I thought this was a really valuable and funny conversation. So,
totally
cool. We just start talking. I'll do an intro later.
Huge.
Which is sick.
Amazing.
But anyways, this is Unkempt with Danny Corbo. It's nice to have you back on. We did this, how many months ago is that? We recorded a podcast 3 months ago. Eight?
I'd swear it was like, because I was still in Jolton, and like, I've been in this house, I think, for the last, since September.
Wow.
September, October, November, December, January. Yeah, I think it's been 8 or 9.
8 or 9 months.
Honestly. Yeah.
Dude, that's how long I've been talking about this.
Whoa.
A long time.
It's a long time.
Yeah. And back then I was doing it via Zoom, and my internet connection sucked, and I was like still figuring things out, and I thought the podcast had to be about something. Like, I was really like, it can't just be
some,
me.
Some, like, super deep point.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'm just going to, like, interview artists, and it's going to be about the creative process. And then I listened back to the interviews I did, and I was like, I can't post these.
Maybe, like, instead we could just talk about something easy, like faith and religion, you know?
Right, exactly. Totally.
Something, like, super not complex.
Right.
No layers.
Yeah. Just a light conversation about abortion, basically.
Easy. Right, as two men.
Yeah, two white men talking about abortion.
As two men, I think the thoughts on our could really speak. Truly.
Yeah, we definitely won't go there. But anyways, it's good to see you, dude.
Oh, man. Good to see you.
Yo, the last time, one of the last times we talked on the phone just casually was kind of intense.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, I guess it was. It didn't feel, like, too intense when, like, you gave a lot of constructive criticism on, like, I hate saying criticism, too, because it's not even, like, criticism. It's just suggestions. And they were cool because, like, I don't know, stuff like that always, you, like, take it in and kind of internalize it in at least the different things. Like, the last project that just happened or whatever, like, I started using Splice more because I was like, wait, maybe I should check it out and start using, like, more samples and stuff.
Yeah.
Which led me down a whole rabbit hole of, like, another things and, like, other artists and stuff like that. But, right, yeah, you never know where, like, a conversation is going to bump. But
yeah, exactly. Totally. And the last project you shared with me, you sent me a Dropbox link a couple days ago. And it's fantastic. It's so good. It's like, it definitely feels like a huge step forward in your work and your music. But, dude, I don't know what got into me when we talked on the phone that time. That was like a couple weeks ago or a month ago or something. But I just like...
I felt fine after. How do you feel?
I was like, fuck, I hope I didn't stress him out or like upset him. But I just... I think what it was I just, for some reason, I just felt a lot of love for you and I wanted success for you. And I was like,
yeah,
trying to just channel that a little bit. And I don't think I said anything that gnarly, but.
No, there was no point where I was like, I mean, except for like the whole combo when I was just like, fuck Ashton. You know, like the entire time.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, but no, there's never a point. I was chilling the whole time.
What did I don't even remember what I said, but it was something like, don't be afraid to take this seriously. You know?
Right. Yeah. No, but I mean, it's a good point and stuff too. I mean, cause I thought about it this year and like after making this project and stuff, I was like, you know, it'd be cool to like put a little more effort and just a little thought into like, all right, I'm going to release a month or more out for like, if I do two singles off this small EP, whatever it is, or if I do one, I'm going to release them like a month away from each other.
Right.
For just take more time. And I'm going to make a little short film of it with my friend Liz, who's out here.
Oh, cool, so, dude.
Yeah, she's great. She's the one who takes all the photos, is taking all the photos and stuff and, like, does music videos and, like, all kind of... Every time I work with her, I'm like, it's cool because I'm definitely, like... When I do, like, we're on... I'm not... I feel like, I'm not at Liz's level in terms of just what she does.
Like,
yeah,
creatively.
So it's cool to like, just like the quality of it is so high. Like the pictures, I've never gotten pictures back really like that, except for working with my friend Jake in LA.
Right.
Who, I met through my roommate Tommy, who takes amazing photos and stuff, but like just super professional. It was really cool.
Yeah. It's so important to surround yourself with people like that because they make you better, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But so do you and Liz work together at Trader Joe's?
No, we met. She was checking out and I was bagging at the time and we were just talking and like just became friends through that. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. Liz taught me the Buddhist chant, the Nam-myoho Renge Kyo thing.
Wait, tell me all about that. What is that? I have no idea what you just said.
It's this chant that, so Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, I actually can't even remember what it is technically, but I think it's something along the lines of like polishing the mirror of your life. So it's just like a mantra that you'd repeat like over and over. So I chant now with like a sound bowl or whatever. And there's that EP I did called Aram that just a lot of ambient-y kind of spiritually things. And one of the records on it was me chanting, but just a bunch of pitch shifts to add harmonies and stuff.
Whoa.
But, yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah. It's up there.
That's fucking crazy.
It's around.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, for the five people who are going to listen to this, what the hell is a Buddhist chant? Like, what does it do for you?
It's just kind of, it recenters me. for it calms me down. It slows down my mind. Because the more my mind is racing and stuff like that, the less in touch I am with reality.
Right.
So I can't actually see what's there if there's all this mind stuff going on. And then when the mind stuff kind of slows down and simmers down, can actually just see something for what they are. It kind of reminds me of actually when you were talking about, I listened to the one with Quinn Dean a little bit, the podcast.
Yeah.
The first one that you did. And when you were talking about, like, I think you both were talking about when somebody says something and the way you can interpret it and how that can be, like, exactly, like, not what was meant, the way your mind can spin it around.
Right.
That kind of stuff just helps me, like, those thoughts, if they do go through my head or something, they just completely go down and I'm just listening to what's actually being said.
Exactly.
So it's, like, it's a deeper way to get to the truth rather than just all the fake stuff that's going around.
Yeah.
Creates less problems.
Yeah, 100%, dude. Would you agree that there's a lot of ways to achieve that?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that with, like, I mean, going into religion and other stuff, I think they're all paths or whatever things of spirituality and things that lead to whether or not you believe it's a similar or, like, the same thing. They're all just paths to get you to that space of being connected with the universe and being connected with some kind
right.
of conglomeration of the whole
yeah.
of like all the organisms and everything.
100%.
But
dude,
yeah, just all paths.
Yeah. Wow. There's so much to say there. But the first thing that comes to mind is, like, before we pushed record just now, I was downstairs having a cigarette and some coffee. And I was like, dude, I have to find a way to start my day with meditation and prayer and, like, yep. center myself first thing, because I know how to do it and I've done it before. But I just felt like this morning I woke up and I felt groggy. And then I was like, okay, like, dude, like, if somebody could look at my thoughts, like, read them on a transcript, it would just be fucking wild. Like, I was automatically just filled with anxiety this morning and
yeah.
And also thinking, like, what if this doesn't go well? Like, is Danny mad at me? How much time
right,
do I
projections.
Have before this? Yeah, exactly. And, like, so, I went downstairs, had a cigarette, and I just was like, dude, I gotta find a way to, tap into a form of spirituality that can, like you said, bring me closer to the truth, because there's so much, you know, there's so many racing thoughts all the time and so much anxiety. And so that was the first thing that came to mind. And I've just been having a hard time with that, like slowing down. Because,
yeah, it can be tough. I mean, you've also been in album mode and, like, just been making stuff all the time, you know?
Right, yeah.
I can kind of spin you out a little bit.
Totally.
Anybody.
And especially with this, you know, it's like starting the podcast and working on the documentary
yeah.
and there's a lot going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, totally. That going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So
how is the documentary?
Dude.
How's it going?
I think it's so sick.
Sick.
I'm really happy with it. It's like, it's the most Ashton thing I've ever done.
Frozen in your arms if I just say something, say something. I love that.
Dude.
That interlude is amazing.
Yo, I asked Zach.
Shout out to Zach.
I shout him out on every podcast. It's fucking awesome. I joke with him, like, that we're getting married, you know? But it won't be a romantic thing. It's just, like, we're so tied to the hip that it just makes sense to just get married and have, like, a very platonic relationship. But
you might as well,
right.
honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's just a joke.
Split rent,
right? Yeah, 100%. Just you know, lessen the tax,
lessen the financial
yeah.
financial situation, you know.
Exactly.
Cut some taxes.
But yeah, I asked him to make a piano interlude right after I Want to Dance. And I don't remember why I thought about that, but I just, in my mind, I just knew, like, oh, that would be so sick. And he sent it to me, like, in 2 days. And he said he sat down and wrote it in, like, 10 minutes. and just push record, and that was it. And like the way he writes and his work ethic and how confident he is and his creativity is fucking mind-blowing to me. Like, he just can do shit like that. Like, I don't know. That song is deceptively simple. You know what I mean? It's so simple and it's so beautiful. So,
yeah, it sounds like something that was written in like 10 minutes.
Right.
For like, and I mean that just in the sense of like, there's something very like magical and
right,
just like channeled through it.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I'm really happy with how that turned out. And the documentary is just, like, my cousin flew out from Phoenix and he just followed me around for like 3 or 4 days here in the city and just got inside of my world and just taped everything, you know, like he just, the camera was always on. And I just talked, like, he and I have a relationship that is so new. You know, he's younger than I am and we never were very close. And like, he's from a side of my family that I'm not that close to. And so we didn't even really know each other until a couple weeks ago in some ways.
Yeah.
And we got really close really fast. And whatever that relationship dynamic is really lended itself to a really honest and kind of beautiful snapshot of my life. Because there was no judgment, you know, like I didn't feel like, oh, this person's judging me. I just was able to like be my total self and say what I thought. And yeah, I'm excited about it, man. It's going to be great.
That's exciting. Yeah.
yeah, it's funny what you said about going back to the spiritual thing. I just thought it was funny, like, how you said, like, seeing yourself as a piece of the whole thing, you know, like as a part of what's happening. And Quinn and I talked about that on the second episode that we just recorded yesterday for like a long time, you know, just like, the episode is called, you know, the self and the ego, basically. And it's so hard for people for myself, I should say, to like see the world as something that is not happening to me, but is like happening for me and with me, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, too, I mean, it's happening through you, you know?
Right.
Like the stuff, the way you are and the way that you're channeling and whatever it is.
Right.
It's just, that mindset is so important too, to have, like, the universe is, like, it's helping you and it is at your back, like, pushing you through things,
right,
whatever you need to do.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you start exploring different spiritual paths, and were you raised like that, or?
Definitely. My mom sang in the church growing up, and like later on now, because my mom's very spiritual and my dad was raised Catholic. So he still like he was on a plane ride or something and it was in a monsoon and he was like, well, this could be it. And he like reverted back to it, saying like the 10 Hail Marys.
Right.
Or whatever, over and over again, like the Catholic in him came out. But so I guess he leans that way, but my mom always had like spiritual books around that didn't really align with any particular religion, but they were just, a lot of them were like Buddhist teachers. There were some Christian teachers. There were a lot of other people that didn't like identify with a religion. There was like Indian philosophy and other things. And a lot of it was Eastern spirituality or from there. But yeah, she sang in the church growing up and I talked to her about it later, like, I think a couple of years ago, and I was like, so why'd you like, did you enjoy it? Or like, why'd you, I guess, go to the church and like do that? Cause we eventually just stopped. Like when she stopped singing, like we didn't really go back. We didn't go to church after. And then she was like,
Christian,
oh, I just
church?
Want to sing. It was a Lutheran church.
It was a Lutheran church.
Technically. So
sorry to cut you off.
But
she said what?
No. Yeah. But she made the comment like, oh, I just wanted to sing. That's why I was there.
Right.
That was, she just wanted to sing every week and like be able to do that. And so I didn't go into much more detail on it, but But yeah, so she always had books lying around the house, and I picked one up when I was 17 or around there, and I hadn't really thought about it too much or up until then. And then I read this book by like Thich Nhat Hanh called Living Buddha, Living Christ. And it was just talking about mindfulness and like the parallels between Christianity and Buddhism.
Right.
And the things between them and the stuff that they share. And like one of his friends, I think, is Thomas Merton, who is, I don't know if he's Lutheran or Christian or identifies as what, but they were both friends from different religions and stuff, and respected each other a lot and like kind of helped each other see kind of the similarities between the two. But I guess it started when I was like 17 or around there. I read The Power Now, that Eckhart Tolle thing.
Yeah.
And that was just about being present and other stuff. And like, yeah, I started there, and then I just started reading those books all the time. And eventually I got to like Ram Dass, who went, did a ton of acid and LSD and all these psychedelics. And he was like, where, like, who knows about this? Like, where can I get this? Cause it was pretty illegal at the time, and he got kicked out of Harvard and everything.
Right.
And he was a professor. He was a behavioral like psychology professor or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Along that lines, like a therapist almost. And he was like, I can't like get in line with this, is too like mind focused. Like everything LSD is doing is like outside of that. So he ended up in India somehow, and through this miraculous like story, he met with his guru Maharaji, who like he went up, and Maharaji like knew how his mom had passed away. He literally just said like spleen without anyone telling him, because he just knew. Because like gurus in India, gurus like Maharaji, which are fairly rare, but they're just like pure universe in there. Kind of like the ascended masters, like when you think about Jesus or Buddha or like the other things that have just come to this point of consciousness of just being tapped into everything. But I think the cool thing about it is like, it's funny too. Sorry to go off on a tangent, but there's always the thoughts of like, oh, well, like if you could, if those people have those kinds of powers, or those beings have those kinds of powers, like why wouldn't they just use them all the time or like do other things? And I think the thing is like with those people, like they recognize once you're at that point, you're so in tune with the universe that like the powers aren't where it's at. Like that's not the point.
Sure.
The whole point is like everything outside of that and just being connected. And they only ever serve to push you towards your highest path or whatever that is.
Right. Yeah. And also I think the other piece of that is like so much of that way of that spiritual path is about letting go and acceptance. You know what I mean? And like,
absolutely. Yeah.
And to try to control completely. Is just like control is the number one thing that like you're not supposed to do, you know?
Yeah, and just letting life happen.
Right, yeah.
And, yeah, acceptance and, like, not, I guess basically just forgiving yourself in the end. Right. And, like, yeah. Ultimately to just be present, because you kind of have to.
Totally.
For, like, all the other stuff. But
okay, so talk about
yeah
the relationship between self-forgiveness and being present, because this is something I thought about a lot.
I feel like if you can't forgive yourself for things or like the way that you feel or like whatever's happened or whatever you've done or whatever you did in your life, it always keeps you stuck in the path. And it's just kind of like keeping one foot like in cement in the mud that keeps you from moving forward.
Right.
Towards your like kind of path and stuff like that. And being present, or at least attempting to be present in things and like breathing and stuff like that, and meditation and everything else, kind of forces you to acknowledge those things that are there. So it doesn't mean that like, okay, I'm present now and I've completely forgiven myself for everything. It's that those things just come up and it's kind of like you have to recognize them and see them there, and you can ignore them or push them down, but they'll always come back up.
Right.
As like each time you get into presence and stuff like that. And then, I guess just breathing through it. Cause there's so many conditioned patterns that like we have that are conditioned through like past events and stuff like that, that like color the way we see the world and things, and like the way that we interpret things and everything else. And it's just interesting the way that that is, and like recognizing those patterns. And the more I think that recognition comes up, like the less those patterns have a hold on you, especially any negative patterns or anything like that. It's just recognition,
right,
of when they pop up, and then noticing. It's like I always talk about just coming back to the breath in terms of presence and stuff. Come back in and just focus on your breathing, and it'll bring you right back into presence pretty quick.
Right, right.
And the more you do that consistently, it's like a habit almost, and it becomes a habit eventually. And closer and closer, more times than not, you'll close the gap.
Right.
Like slowly. And but it's funny too. Always like you have those moments. I feel like those moments of clear consciousness come through, and then Ram talks about this in a lot of his talks that he's given. But like, you'll fall back into it. Like you'll fall back into your story. Hmm. Or whatever it is. There are like old patterns and stuff like that. And I've been thinking about this really recently too, with like falling back. Cause I haven't been doing Qigong like I was doing for a long time every day. I've just been making music now, which feels really good. And that feels like the right thing for me to do at the moment. But, where was I going with that?
You're saying you haven't been chanting as much.
Right. I haven't been doing any of that stuff as much, but, and I've been kind of enjoying being able to like dive back into my world and the story and the way my head like colors it, but then also knowing like deep down when these things happen and when I fall into patterns or like other things within the story, it can zoom out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and to be able to zoom out and come out of your story. Cause I feel like I was talking about this with my friend Doug, but making music and stuff like that, a lot of the time, depending on what your path is, like if you're making music, you kind of, sometimes it can be really nice and beneficial and almost completely necessary to dive into your story.
Oh yeah.
You know, into 100%. The story, and not just meditate through everything. And like, cause that's not my path. And I'd imagine that's not your path. Like Ram's path was to be a speaker and like focus on and all that spiritual stuff. Yeah. And a teacher, exactly. And then everyone's got their own little path. And my path definitely isn't that in that regard. Like, you know, we make music and stuff. And so the way we deal with things is just a little different. Like sometimes you do have to dive into the story, but it's nice to have that part there. But I don't know.
Yeah,
anyways,
yeah, no,
what about you? What are your thoughts on that, on all that?
Dude, it's so wild how similar this is to the conversation I had with Quinn. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, wow, like so many of us think about this shit, you know, and we all have different language for it and read different literature and whatever, but it all comes back to like awareness and self-compassion and learning how to be more present. And, you know, as far as that last point is concerned, Quinn asked me yesterday, do you think it's a bad thing to like reach for your goals, you know? And I was like, no, I think it's bad to not be aware that like, if you need to be aware of the fact that there is a part of your ability to be content and ability to have joy that's tied to what you can accomplish, you know, but like a lot of people don't even really have that awareness. So they don't see how that's actually not true. But for me, it's like, I pretend that it's true because it helps me move forward with music. But like, I know deep down that I don't need anything. Like, I have everything I need. And
that's the cool thing, because it's like the basis.
Yeah, it is the basis. You know, like, and it took a long time to get there, and I still have a really hard time like practicing that. And like,
yeah,
if I felt that way all the time, my life would probably be so different. But like, the point is like, you know that there's, it's almost like you're giving your ego just enough room to breathe to like propel you forward, but you're aware that it's your ego, you know? And,
totally. Yeah.
I think that's really important. But, you know, the other thought I had was like, you know, going all the way back to that question I asked you about, the relationship between self-forgiveness and being present. I love how you broke that down, you know, and I definitely have seen it play out in my life. Like, you can be constantly discouraged and distracted by your past, or you can choose to let go and like take a deep breath and realize that like we're here now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just now. And everything that's happened has happened. And I think, you know, for some reason, this is just becoming a huge piece of me and like my mind and my heart. But I have just become obsessed with wanting the people in my life to offer themselves the grace and compassion and love that they deserve.
Yeah.
And I really think that that is like the only thing that holds people back, is an inability to be like, no, who you are right now, just like you are, with your life in pieces and all the mistakes and all the flaws, that is perfect and you're welcome here.
Yeah.
And like, you deserve, like, you're just as valuable as everybody else. You know, I heard somebody say like,
yeah, totally.
I heard somebody say, something like, you are better than nobody and nobody is better than you.
Yeah, that's, well, I feel like that's exactly it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, that hits it.
Right. I was talking to my mother the other night, and I was like, look how far you've come. Like, look how much life has just thrown in your face and how incredibly you've handled it and moved forward.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't take time to appreciate that and give yourself, you know, that kind of grace and love and compassion, like, you're gonna implode. Like, you can't, you know, you can't just, you don't just get to, like, change who you are in a day. Like, it happens over time. Yeah. And, like, we're all making progress constantly. And so I think, like, When people have problems with like fear and anxiety and anger and stuff like that, like, hold on one sec.
Bless you.
I'm just saying, like, when you see adults behave like children, all I see is somebody who doesn't know that they are love. You know, like,
yeah totally. Yeah. I mean, it's cool you bring that up too, and I mean, that ties into like that again, that kind of ties back into like spirituality completely. Like, like Maharaji, that was his thing. He was pure love. Like, everyone would just cry when they'd see him because they felt completely accepted, like immediately. And I feel like that was probably the same way with Jesus, you know? Same thing. Like, he was hanging out with all the quote-unquote sinners and whatever it was, you know? Like, all the time.
Right,
like, loved everybody.
Totally.
But yeah, that definitely...
Dude.
Yeah, it feels like it, you know?
The Jesus thing is so funny. Like, I was talking about this with some friends last week about how Jesus would not last a week in any church in America.
I don't think... I mean, I feel like he'd, like, go if someone invited him. And he'd be like, yeah, sure, and, like... But he'd probably be elsewhere, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like...
Like, I could see Jesus, as he's been described in the New Testament, I could see him walking into any, like, evangelical, charismatic, fundamental church and just being like, yeah, I don't buy that.
Yeah. That's so funny.
I'm going to go to the bar. There's,
well, it's funny, too. I just saw this documentary called Beautiful Disguise, and it was this guy named Casey Tewari or something, but he was this really high yogi who was a school teacher. Like, he was a school school administrator or something, and he was, like, Maharaji's right-hand man. It was, like, they were best friends or whatever it was. But he'd go through these states of, like, samadhi, which is basically when your consciousness leaves your body and goes into, like, the whole, like, his eyes would just roll back. It was hung, and he'd just, like, leave. And he'd just be there, like, rigid, wherever he was. And it could just happen at any time. Like, anything could just set him off into it. But he talked about one of the there was a guy that was leading him through San Francisco, I think it was, specifically. And he took them to a district where there was a bunch of prostitution and other things, a bunch of people, like, probably somewhere, like, in that vicinity of – or going to, like, acupuncture or something. And all this was around, and – this guy who was leading them was, like, horrified because he's like, oh, my gosh, I took this, like, holy man into this place. And then, like, Casey and I guess his partner, they looked around and, like, he made the comment. He was like, this is like heaven. Like, you could – everything you could ever want. Like,
wow.
It was just his perspective. He was like, this is amazing.
What do you think he meant by that?
I think that, like – I think it's just like a recognition of perspective on things. It's not that. I mean, heaven can be like wherever you are.
Right.
Like at any time, wherever it is. And I think the whole Jesus thing too, like the point with Jesus is that like everybody walking on the earth is Jesus. Like it's in them. One of my friends, Finn, talks about that.
Right.
But he's like, that's in everybody.
Yeah,
whether 100%. We know it or not, and it's like so, you can feel it too. Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, anyways, no, I mean you can just feel it when like you do acts of like whatever it is that of like kindness or like love or acceptance or just being present and being there and
totally.
You can feel like it raises your vibration, but yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I have a story about that. So. This like epitomizes grace for me for some reason. And I've really been learning how to like accept people exactly for who they are instead of wishing they were different than they are. And I'm actually just going to blow my nose once really quick. And
Hit
I can't
it.
Turn the mic off. So sorry to the listeners. I'm in my closet and I just blew my nose into a shirt that's hanging up. Okay, what was I just going to say? Oh, so the epitome of grace is like you don't have to do anything. It's already there. You're already welcome here just like you are. And a lot of Christians like say that that's what they believe, but it's not. Like... that's not where the story ends. It's like, yes, grace is not something that you could ever work to deserve. That's true, and God loves you no matter what. But you still have to do these things if you want to go to heaven. It's like, that's not, that's literally nowhere in the Bible. What the fuck are you talking about? like, you know what I mean? Like, but church has just become so, like, political and financially driven and, you know, over the last 1,000 years, it's just developed a reputation of controlling and oppressing people and whatever. So it makes sense, like, the way it is, you know, like, I get why it is the way it is. But anyways, I didn't learn grace in church. I grew up in church my whole life, and I was, like, a very devout little Christian kid. I learned grace when I got sober. That was the first time it actually sunk in, like, that I didn't have to do or be anything. Like, I just was, like, loved, and that's it. And so the other day, this is the epitome of grace for me. This guy calls me, and I gotta find a way to tell this story, but not reveal too many details. But
yeah,
this guy is, like, he's probably in his 30s. He is definitely from, like, a more poverty-stricken background. He's a very intense person. He's super, he's very engaging and personable, but he's also, like, he can be a lot for people to be around. And his whole persona is just, like, he takes up the room. You know what I mean? Like, when he's there, you know he's there. And I think he's beautiful. Like, I think he's an amazing guy. And I know him through this, like, recovery program that we're both in. And so he calls me, and he's, like, telling me that he had a bad experience at this recovery thing. And he sort of acted out and was yelling at other people in the group. And they, like, wanted to kick him off the Facebook group for the recovery thing. And, like, you know, he, like, really got into it with people. And he's telling me about this. And he's, like, he literally, like, he was, like, I acted out. And he said, like, something like, am I going to be okay? You know, like, he called me and, like, a child was like, do you accept me? Like, that's really what he was saying. I had this bad experience feeling rejected by the one place that I feel like I belong. Do you accept me? Can you tell me I'm welcome here? And he obviously didn't say those words, but that's what he meant. And I just was like, dude, I love you. And if you don't keep wreaking havoc on this recovery program, I will be upset. Like, keep being you. You got to keep showing up.
Yeah.
Fuck the haters. Like, you're just, you're so welcome here, and I love you so much. And there's nothing you have to do. And I could hear him choking up a little bit. He was like, thank you, man. I needed to hear that. And that's the thing. It's like, when people are acting out, it's literally just a need for love. That's it.
Right. Just loving attention, acceptance.
Yeah. And truly. And so I just thought, like, wow, I wish that I wish I didn't have to get sober to learn that. I wish that that was, like, the primary teaching at the church I grew up in. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. It's not that big a deal. You're welcome here. You don't have to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, but instead it was like, are you having sex with your girlfriend? Do you read the Bible every day? Are you giving us money? It's like about those things. And it's like, how did it become about the church and not our relationship with God?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. That's my little tidbit, but
yeah,
I feel like I've done such a bad job of explaining all of that today. But, you know, I think for the listener, like, if it makes you uncomfortable to look in the mirror and look at yourself and be like, I love you, you're welcome here. Like, if that makes you uncomfortable, just do it. You know, like, it's...
Yeah.
It's learning how to connect more to yourself and be more aware and have a more present state of mind. It's literally just about, like, doing actions. Like, it's not... It's very much like a... You are how you behave, you know? So you just have to do things that are, like, different and whatever. And I don't know. I just hate that people hate themselves so much. Because I've been there. And it's like...
Yeah. It kills me. I mean, it's hard. And it's... I mean, when you hate other people, too, like, you really just don't like... At least for me, I just don't like myself. Whenever I'm mad at, like, other people or stuff like that, it's just because I feel bad internally.
Right.
Because it's typically got something to do with me almost always. It's funny too. I mean, I should say that, like, yeah, like I did Qigong all the time and like I'll meditate and stuff like that. But like, I feel gross like all the time, like a lot, a decent amount of the time, not all the time. But like, I mean, yeah, when I'm at work or stuff like that, I mean, just yesterday I was in such a bad mood, like with other things. It's funny too. And then, I think I get there. It's really crowded on Sundays. It gets super busy. There's just a lot of energy and like it's pretty frantic. And sometimes I can just get really caught up in it and just like going really fast and like just get really frustrated with like everything and like all of it and being there and just like but it was funny too. I mean, I was in the break room and then a friend who was there just made one of the coworkers, said something really sweet about like her friend, comes in all the time. And I guess was like, yo, like, such and such said like she always sees you smiling. Like he was such a wonderful energy or whatever it is like that. And like, and in my head I was like, wow, I like don't feel that way a lot of the time. Right. So that's kind of funny to hear, but it was really like lovely to hear and it kind of reset me. And I was like, oh, maybe, cause I can get in my head sometimes too, where it's just like, man, like maybe I am just like an angry person sometimes or like internally and like just bugging out. And then all of a sudden something will happen too. That happens so much too. Like if you're ever like, if I'm ever annoyed with somebody or something like that, and then something will happen and it'll just split and I'll just be like, oh, wait, that was dumb. Like, not that it was dumb, but just internally, like, I was like, wow, that was unimportant, but also just like, I was just mad at myself. But I don't know. It's really interesting too, with like, it talks, there's like Dharma, which is just kind of, I guess it goes back to what you were saying about like, I guess not striving for things, but like doing the things that like doing your work in life that you feel called to do and things, and like ignoring that often can lead to feeling bad.
Right.
Like when I'm not making music for a long period of time, it's not like me making music every day is going to lead me to the Greek and to sell out stadiums and go play with Phoebe Bridgers and like John Mayer or like anybody else. It's not that. Like maybe none of that is in the cards, and maybe like the biggest room that I end up playing to is like 10 people or like whatever it is, you know? But like I know it's the right, like sitting down and when I'm making stuff or whatever it is, it feels so right and correct on the dharmic path, where it's like, okay, no, like I really should be doing this. Like, and maybe there's times when I let up and it's like, okay, it's good to take a day or two or whatever it is. But every time I sit down, even when it's hard and stuff, it always just like it's so obvious where it's like, all right, this is definitely like part of the path. Like, this is part of your dharma and it's part of your work or whatever it is to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can ignore it and feel shitty, or you can just do it and feel good.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Even though
we don't
feel good all the time.
So much of our misery is because we tamp down like who we really are.
Yeah. And it's like, so much of it is fear and just like, oh, this isn't going to mean anything, or like, oh, this doesn't matter, or like, why would I put in all this work if like it's not going to mean anything to anybody else.
Right. And like, the reason to do it is because, means, you know, nothing matters.
Right. In actuality, I mean, like, the universe just goes on. Like, we die and maybe we come back. Maybe we just turn into energy. Maybe whatever it is, you know? Like, but that's the funny thing, too. I mean, nothing matters and everything matters.
100%.
At the same time.
It's both, like,
it's always a paradox. But, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, well, dude, I love talking about this shit with you, and I feel like I could do this for another few hours and not get tired of it. But can you catch me up on how it's going in Nashville really quick and just talk music?
Yeah.
And then probably got to get out of here around 11:15.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, music, I mean, it's been good out in Nashville and stuff like that. Trader Joe's has turned out to be really, really great. And I've met kind of most of my friends out here who are musicians. I met at TJ's. A couple of them are from school at Berkeley, the school I went to. And they're all, it's really sick, you know. Some of them are going on tours and stuff like that. So it's really fun to hear about that. A friend just left on tour, actually, yesterday. And they're doing a bunch of dates that, like, they self-booked and everything.
Wow.
And, like, people are just doing the thing. And, like, without management or with management, some people are getting managers. Some people are booking on their own. Some people are – it's all different things and all different paths. But the main thing is everybody's making music.
Right.
And that's sick. And everybody's, like, excited and very supportive about what everybody's doing. Interesting. A friend just had a show last night with his band. Bunch of people went. So that's been really great, honestly. And to get into that, and those friends at TJ's have just kind of led me to feel connected to the Nashville music scene, which I do feel a little bit connected to now.
That's
amazing.
In terms
of like having a community of musicians and like just knowing people who are around who are doing kind of similar things and stuff like that. And
right. And
I don't
when
know,
you moved there, you didn't know anybody, did you?
Didn't know anybody. Or no, I had a couple friends from college. My friend Doug lives out here, who I love. And but that was really, I mean, that was about it for the most part in terms of people who I knew in Nash. There was a couple others, but not many. But yeah, tons of friends, tons of, it's been a lot of music, a lot of making. It's been a some shows and stuff like that. It's all been going good, honestly, just working on more music. And I just want to take this year to really kind of own in on production a little bit. And I've been listening to this guy named Breakins who does hyperpop kind of stuff, but also mixes kind of other elements. What's fascinating about like that artist to me is they're 21 and like really young. And at like 17, they put out this record called like Hypogeisia or something like that. But the production is on it is just like, wow, like someone who was just like an A-list producer could have done this at like 17 years old. And I feel like that's because mixed and mastered the whole thing, does everything themselves, like all of it. And it kind of made me realize like, holy shit, like with the tools that are available now, you can do it all yourself entirely. It takes time to learn all this stuff, but like if that person did that and they did and proved it's possible, like
right,
anyone could do it in their own way.
Yeah.
So I just want to figure that out. But that's pretty much been it. But what about you? How's it been in SF?
Dude, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I certainly don't have the same musical community you do in Nashville. I think that's like maybe the one thing I'm missing. But things are going okay. And, you know, I definitely enjoy kind of being the lone wolf or whatever. And I like working on music by myself and keeping things small and whatever. But, yeah, I've been trying to book more shows and it's fucking impossible, dude. It's so hard. But I just learned that, like, you have to keep going and, like, people are busy mm-hmm. and you just have to keep sending emails. And so trying to get smarter, you know, a lot of this is just, like, be smart, you know.
Does SF have independent venues that are smaller?
Yeah, it does. A couple of them.
Because Nashville's got a ton and it's easy to book shows.
Yeah, it's not.
Truly. That's so interesting.
I was talking to a booker the other day over Instagram, and I was like, yo, dude, because he works for the Hotel Utah. And
yeah.
I probably shouldn't put him on blast like this because he's their only booker. But whatever. I was like, hey, like, is So Far hard to book here in the city, like So Far? And he was like, yeah, So Far is definitely, like, they book the same artists over and over, and it's really hard to get into that circle. But once you do, you play all the time. And I was like, I messaged him back. I was like, isn't that the opposite of what So Far represents itself as? And he just didn't say anything.
That's so funny.
I took that as like, yeah, you know how annoying it is to be an artist who's good and like just wants one placement and can't get it because people are clicky and whatever. But, you know, it's that I think I've realized that the world of music management and booking is just people. And it's different than like these jobs don't have, you know, HR departments and shit. And like they don't have long lists of protocols and shit. So
yeah,
if somebody doesn't have time to get back to you or if they just don't want to book you for whatever reason, there's nothing you can do, and that's okay. Like, that's just, and so you have to find someone else and connect with people. And, you know, so it's funny. It's like, I wish that it was easier to contact So Far and be like, hey, I am like way more qualified than 70% of the artists you book. Like, why can't I get a show in SF? Like, I wish that there was a person that had to be like held, like that had to give me a reason.
How many times have you submitted?
Just once in San Francisco, but I've been talking to their booker for like months and she's just left me on read like so many times. And
yeah,
I've had people send emails for me and like, do like, I did an Instagram campaign once where like I had 10 people like tag So Far SF and be like, book Ashton Annie.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they never did. It's just annoying, you know? So, but the trick is to not get too caught up on that shit and like, okay, fine. That's not going to happen right now. Whatever. It's sort of their loss because that is exactly what my music is made for, is that kind of environment.
It's a really good environment for that. Yeah.
So it's like, rooms. It's fine. And the good thing is I got another show at Hotel Utah and I'm just like trying to, you know, stay engaged. But yeah, dude, it's, I don't know. At the moment, I don't feel, you know, I'm yawning and my nose is running and I don't feel super inspired right now or like a lot of good shit happening. But the truth is there is a lot going on and I've come a long way and I just have to keep staying engaged and not take things personally. So that's how it's all going. But yeah, dude, it has been a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you for taking the time. And I think this will be engaging for people and I hope you feel comfortable sharing it. It's okay if not, but Yeah, I think the way you talk and just your whole vibe is just really relaxed and sweet and funny and yeah, so I'm excited we did this.
Lit. Well, thanks for having me on and the whole thing, you know. Thanks for talking. And the whole deal. The whole situation.
Dude, FaceTime cut out so many times while we were doing this.
Did it really? I saw it cut out once.
Yeah. Wow. I need to switch from Xfinity or something because my internet is just garbage. But
Xfinity can be tough.
Yeah, yeah.
Xfinity can be difficult. But I think Xfinity, honestly. Anyways.
What's up?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think we have Xfinity in the house. But anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Here in the city, for some reason, I don't know. Yeah, I got a meeting at noon, and I should get some things done beforehand. But so good to see you. Thanks again.
Yeah, good to see you.
And, yeah, don't forget who you are, where you came from, how special you are.
Thank you. Love you.
What if we both stop recording right now and I was like, just a totally different person?